B-Pod Studios.
I tell you, I learned a little something about him, and I know the coach had to learn something about him, and he's on the line right now. Brett Brown, the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. Brett, how you doing today? Great win last night.
Yeah, it was, Mike. No, it was a good win, and we're now here in Sacramento getting ready for the Kings tomorrow night.
And I know you can't lose sight of that game, but, you know, a lot of people are making, they're looking at this game, and frankly, I thought it was maybe your best win as a head coach in a regular season game, you know, the Miami series with a couple of great wins, but how did you feel about the way your team performed down the stretch last night?
I mean, the excitement of Ben being named to the All-Star team prior to the game, the fact that I think that our locker room is coming together and the players are just genuinely coexisting well, playing some players in some different spots, hoping to get ready for the playoffs, and then to play against who is the best team in the NBA and get a win out of that. All in all, I think it was a good night.
Well, it was a great night. Of course, Joel Embiid was great. You got contributions off the bench. But the game belonged to number 25 last night. And I don't know about you and how you look at this, but if you're watching that game, you saw a guy dominate the game last night.
I agree. And I went on record. I felt like it was Ben's best game, if not, you know, top two or three. I think I don't know what the wording is, but I feel like maybe the weight of hoping to be an all-star, some of the expectations maybe in the marketplace. I think that once he was named to the team, he just seemed to play free. And athletically, he is so gifted and just imposed sort of an athletic feel and a skill package feel as a 6'10 point guard all over the game. And I feel like last night we might have seen Ben's best game.
You're coaching this game, and you know how explosive they are. And Curry was unstoppable last night. And Clay not on the floor, obviously, but they're still so potent. The third quarter starts to get away from you a little bit, and then boom, you guys make some really clutch shots, couple clutch three pointers from some bench guys. At that point, how are you coaching this game?
I mean, you walk that line of making sure that we are proactive, that we're not playing conservative. And recognizing that at any point, you know, they can go bananas and just start making a lot of threes and the game changes quickly. And so somewhere in the middle, you know, you try to coach the team and just try to make sure that you got the matchups probably more than anything on the court that you feel like there not might be a sort of an immediate explosion with some of their players.
Well, I was curious to know what your plan of attack was going to be on Curry last night. And you tried to a lot of different people. I guess when he's going off like that, there's really not much you can do. But what was your plan defensively for him?
Well, it tied into the plan for the team because, I mean, his plan is very similar to the rest of the team. When you really studied them and you looked at just different holes that they might have or things that you might be able to exploit or better sell to your players, one of the stats that came out was when they shoot 32 threes, not make, when they shoot 32 threes or more, they're 25-4. And when they shoot 31 and less, they're 11-10. And we dumped a lot of our energy just on trying to restrict the number of attempts. Now, that final stat got away from us, but the notion of just being so mindful of the three-point line dominated the game plan, and it especially dominated the game plan with Steph.
Talking to Brett Brown, coach of the Sixers, big win last night, 113-104. You're 5-2 in this 12-game stretch, which is pretty good. I think it's ahead of the pace that a lot of people thought. And I think a lot of people saw last night, even in just one game, the growth of this team, that this team now can go into a 7-game series against the best in the East. There's a couple teams that are ahead of you and give a fighting chance. Because before last night's game, I don't know if people were 100% convinced of that. Do you feel that now?
I still think that we're going to be aggressive in by trade deadline. Elton is being very proactive on looking how do you sort of bolster the bench. You know, everybody's kind of been on record wondering what's going to happen at the backup five. There's going to be some wing considerations that we think through with Corey Brewer, type 10-day contracts coming to an end. I feel like last night on a one-game snapshot, everybody walks away excited. But what you and I both know is to beat somebody four times in a seven-game series is a different task. And so I like what I'm seeing. I feel like we're heading in the right direction. But if I'm honest, I feel like we might need a little bit more to do ultimately what we all want to happen.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people will also feel that, and it's just a matter of, like, how you're going to be able to pull this off. Are we looking at the trade route, or are we looking at maybe buyouts where you can sign a player? Like, what is most likely to happen here?
It's difficult to say one thing could happen more than the other thing. I think that it's just so much a fluid thing, and it's all on the table, and we've seen... You know, what happened with the Knicks and Dallas is significant in the ripple effects of what that might mean and could, you know, in some ways maybe relate to us. And I'm not suggesting that it will. I'm more suggesting that so much is fluid. The league is moving. It's going to heat up over the next 3 to 5 days. And I feel like whether it's a buyout, whether it's a trade, whatever, what everybody should hear is Elton's been great. He's been just very aggressive trying to figure out how do we make our team better so that we can make a deep run into the playoffs.
Brett, are there untouchable, obviously, the obvious untouchables, but I guess I get more specific. Would Markelle Fultz be in play for a trade, or are you guys committed to keeping him there?
You know, I'm leaving this all with Elton. I think that you know, you're trying to do whatever you can to make the team better. It's a boring answer, but it's the best I can give.
Okay. Couple of things about last night's game, and then I'll let you off the hook here. Last night, I'm curious to know, Jimmy Butler being kind of non-engaged in first half, sort of. I don't know if you thought that as well, but it seemed like he was deferring an awful lot. What was going on with him last night?
I think he flipped the switch and, like, locked in defensively. You know, he came out, made some tremendous passes. I do understand, you know, when you look at sort of a stat sheet in the first half, it wasn't like he was forcefully trying to impose himself on the game. I think none of that should surprise us. I feel like this is what we're learning. This is what we're seeing. I do think when the game matters and when the game starts to heat up, this is where historically he's been at his best, and his mindset, I think, just goes to another level. I also think, like, as I start to move him to some point guard type minutes, as he starts to understand, you know, just different areas I'm trying to use him, he's trying to fit in with a pretty good team and, you know, coexist with a decent starting five. All of this is starting to take shape, but I think last night it is true. Like, I just feel like he was focused more on other areas than shooting.
Did you speak to him at all about his first half?
Oh yeah, no, we talk all the time. I enjoy talking with him. It's never a boring conversation, and you know, and it's good. I say that respectfully. I enjoy the collaborative discussions that we have, and you know, it's not really different than you and I talking about. He'll come back, and I believe him. You know, he's really focused on getting other people shots and playing defense. I mean, even the first play of the game, as an example, the play really was designed for him. And then a counter, if he's not able to find a driving lane, was, you know, let's go get JJ a shot when we sort of set a pin down with Joel and JJ coming off Joe. And maybe he could have turned a corner. He chose not to. He just back dribbled out of it, found JJ. JJ makes a shot and off we go. And I just think it's a snapshot of his personality. He plays the game the right way. I think that as time unfolds and when the season gets more serious, I think we're going to see, you know, probably a different Jimmy Butler.
Last question for you is, and I'm trying to get into a mind of a coach here, but your substitution pattern early in games, you seem to be locked into a certain substitution pattern where you'll sub three guys early. What numbers are you telling you? Like, and sometimes you have to do it when you're down, which I think puts a lot of fans at angst. What is your mindset when it comes to substituting early with the three-man substitution?
The fact that those good players can come back and get second row guys. And I always smile when we talk about substitution patterns. There is so much, you know, discussion, it seems, I'm told by my media manager Patrick, that this often is a hot topic. The studies that go into this stuff, the way that we pair the group, I mean, it's just stuff that we dig into deeply. And to your point, when you say, why would you, like, take those guys out and then bring them back in? It's because ultimately it plays out the way that we hope to, with who starts games and end games and who's playing in crunch time. And, you know, with the studies we have, with the gut feel I have as a coach, those decisions are made, and I'm comfortable with how we're flipping this thing around.
So these are primarily analytic analysis as far as these?
No. There's a little bit of that, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have so much information available to us on people that play well with each other. We understand other team substitution patterns, which probably doesn't get discussed very much. You know, when you look at and you study NBA coaches, every one of us are in a routine and a rhythm. Things just don't change on the night. In the playoffs, when we start digging into specific matchups, and as an example, you compare, say, Joel's minutes to DeMarcus's minutes, things change a little bit there. But I think the routine that we have our guys on, and we're also changing some stuff. You know, I'm giving Jimmy the ball more as a point guard. I'm bringing Wilson more from a four to a three. We're playing Ben more at times out of four. You know, all those things we're trying to learn about so that we're well-equipped and not surprised when it matters most in April and May, and we hope June. And so when you say, like, how do you sell the game, there's a lot of pieces. Studying opposition, coaches' gut feel, sometimes people get in foul trouble or injured, finding a routine for your guys where they're not just caught off guard. People like a routine. They like to know their role in a team. And all those things factor into how you sub a team.
All right. And last night at the end of the game, it looked like you had some congenial conversation with both Steve Kerr and Mike Brown last night. What were they telling you?
I mean, the history, I'm not young anymore. And I've been, I think, 19 years in the league. And so, you know, you bump into friends and people you've coached. I coached Steve in the early 2000s and worked with Mike in the same sort of time frame. And they're just friends of mine. They're coaching friends of mine, and we've shared a lot of experiences and more just quick reminiscing, checking in on them and their families. And, you know, you wake up a new day and you're in a new city, and that sort of coaching and life in the NBA.
Did Kerr say to you, gee, you kicked our ass? Did he say that?
In his own way, he congratulated us and did say, you know, you guys played well. And, I mean, he's all class, and he's got a job that we all sort of recognize in nowadays NBA coaching. You're as much managing people and personalities as you are determining strategy. And, you know, I speak often, you know, about that type of stuff with him, and just got a lot of respect for him. He's quality people and a hell of a coach.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.